Welcome to the Stat News Global Podcast. I'm Ramanandas and Gupta. Is it Pathan, Jawan, the Phantom, or Agent Vinod that has been taking out Pakistan-based terrorists relentlessly over the past few years? Why is the US pressuring India instead of acting against Panoon, the US-based Khalistani activist and terrorist who has been publicly calling for the killing of Hindus and Indian diplomats in the US and India? These were the questions I asked Sushant Sareen, senior fellow at the Observer Research Foundation and an expert on Pakistan and India's place in the world.
Sushant, you know, today we're going to be talking about this strange phenomena of anti-Indian sort of terrorists popping off one by one, mostly from Pakistan. But before we start, I'd just like to do a quick question on, you know, this guy called Panoon, who's launched, you know, who's a regular hard-blown Khalistani, and he's been on this anti-India parade. The Americans have sort of, you know, said that there is a plot made by the MEA to sort of pull him down, and that they foiled that plot, and they've actually launched a judicial inquiry into it, and so have we, I believe. What have you got to say on that point first, you know, before we come back to Pakistan?
Look, one is that Panoon is not just a designated terrorist as far as India is concerned, but I think he should be a global terrorist, considering that he has been openly issuing threats against airlines, calling for the assassination of diplomats, his Hindu phobic rants, all of that, announcing bounties for carrying out terror attacks in India. So I think he's clearly a very problematic guy, not just for us, of course, but also for the Americans. And one really needs to ask a question of the Americans as to why they have not moved against this guy. Can you imagine, Ram, that somebody in the United States was to issue a threat tomorrow that no Jew should fly in United Airlines on such and such date, otherwise, you know, they will be flying at their own peril. Mm-hmm. Do you think Americans will keep quiet? They will not take any action against the person?
Right.
Do you think that is likely to happen? If you think that somebody issues death threats against American diplomats, how do you think the FBI is going to treat those guys? If, for example, in a country where you can't even talk, can't even misgender somebody, you openly call for, targeting Hindus and you file their places of worship, you attack their places of worship. How is that any different from somebody attacking a synagogue or a church or a mosque? How is it that it's all right to attack Hindus in the United States? And that's perfectly kosher as far as the American authorities are concerned. But if something similar was to happen to some other community, all hell would break loose. So I think there are very serious questions to be asked about the bona fides of the Americans also. Mm-hmm. And then we come to a particular charge which has been made. Number one, you know, there is the Canadian charge. And it's kind of strange that there are so many gangland killings happening in Canada. In fact, just a couple of days back, again, somebody who had tweeted in favor of India, Punjabi, I'm not sure if he's a Sikh or not, was firing outside his house. Nobody's ever arrested. No action is ever taken. This famed Five Eyes and Canada is a rule of law country. Where does all that rule of law go when it comes to attacking these capturing these Khalistanis? Or is it that rule of law is only until the Jagmeet Singh, that great Jagmeet Singh, who is Trudeau's partner in crime, until and unless we don't get his approval, the Canadian law and order authorities simply collapse? So I think there are very serious questions to be asked. Then about Panoon, look, again, you know, we don't know, the government of India has instituted an inquiry, but that inquiry is also about the nexus between these criminal gangs, the drug mafias, people who are doing gun running, terrorism, all kinds of other things. And if in the course of that inquiry, there is some information which the government of India gets about some characters who are of Indian origin who are probably involved hitting this guy, then we'll have to wait and see what exactly is the reason for it.
Right.
Is it a gangland conflict which has gone wrong and somebody's targeting him? Some payments had to be made, not made, something or the other. So I think it's still early days. The American charge sheet which they have presented, is also kind of laughable in many ways. It sounds more like a movie script. So I think there are a lot of unanswered questions on that one. And just because somebody files a charge sheet does not mean it's necessarily true. And there are reasons to believe that this is a kind of a pressure point which, the white folk are using against us. They've used Khalistan in the past. They've used it in the late 70s and the early 80s against India when they were very close to the Pakistanis and they were funneling weapons and money and taking out the drugs also on behalf of the quote-unquote Mujahideen, who later on became the Taliban and some of whom were responsible for the planning of the 9/11 attacks and people who fought against the Americans for 20 years and killed thousands of American soldiers. But at a time when they were America's favorite child, what Reagan quoted, the Afghan counterparts of America's founding fathers, who then later on went and destroyed the Twin Towers in the U.S., as long as that was happening, the Americans blithely turned a blind eye to the murder and mayhem by these Khalistanis in India. The Brits turned a blind eye. An Indian diplomat was killed. And everybody, got away scot-free. A couple of low-level guys were caught and put in prison. But other than that, the main planners and perpetrators were allowed to go scot-free. There was no action taken against the Pakistani planners who did it. And these were state elements. So, it's a very murky kind of a thing. So I think, we should deal with it with a fair amount of equanimity rather than some of the usual suspects in India getting their knickers in a twist and going completely ballistic of what happens to our reputation. What happens to the American reputation when two of their embassy staffers or diplomats get expelled from Spain for spying on a close ally of theirs? So this, it's a murky world. I don't have the details. I don't think you have the details. I don't think anybody in the public domain has any details. So let's wait and see how it turns out.
What about, React called The Intercept, saying that they have got a secret note from the MEA which says that,
Have you seen the language of that memo?
Yeah, I've seen it. That's okay, not so MEA language at all.
You see, Intercept is a bunch of clowns. They're a bunch of jokers, complete idiots. Mm-hmm. These are people who, they're patsies, basically. They've started this goddamn website. They publish all kinds of nonsense. And somehow it seems that they are the go-to place for anybody who wants to leak anything, right? So the ISI, apparently they claim that the ISI or somebody from some military officer gave them that so-called cipher, which was then used to implicate Imran Khan. Okay.
Right.
That cipher is a work of fiction in many ways. Everybody knew that American-Pakistani relations are strained, right? That cipher says nothing really. But they build up this whole story and then they build up this whole tamasha and, that's their game basically. They have very little information. Most of it is not even authentic. They claim that they have checked it, double-checked it. Have you seen the language of this memo? Do you think the MEA is now that? Indian education standards are far better than the Pakistani ones, and we still write reasonably good English, which is grammatically correct also. It might be very bureaucratic English, but this is not even bureaucratic English. So, these kind of fabrications they'll keep producing and churning out. Again, who takes Intercept seriously?
Yeah, but what do you think is the American game plan is here? What do they expect to leverage us on? Is it just China or something else?
No, I think these are basically just normal pressure tactics. These are the games that big powers play against middle-level powers, and we should be under no illusion that we are, at the end of the day, we are a middle-level power. These are games they play to pressure the middle-level power to force a certain degree of compliance, to create this thing so that ultimately when they want something, you know, you've already pushed one guy to the corner to a point where, you know, on something much more substantial, they'll probably get a greater gift from our side than they would have got otherwise. So these are those kind of games which they play. They also try and balance out things that, you know, the Indians should not get too big for their boots. They should not imagine that, you know, and a lot of people out here, without knowing what the realities of power are, already start, you know, claiming that India has arrived. India is the next superpower. Do we even know what a superpower means? What is our footprint? So I think it's partly to put us in our place. It's partly to tell us that don't think that, you know, you can do things and get away with it. Or even if you're planning to do something, don't even think about it. It's partly to say that, look, we can raise certain issues, whether they are fabricated or they are genuine, but we can raise certain issues to make life very difficult for you, to cause reputational damage. And ultimately, you know, to fix that reputational damage, you'll have to suck up to us.
Right.
Standard games. So I think if you know, the government of India and this government seems to show that, if it holds its nerve, that does not mean that you fight with the Americans, you get into a slanging match with them. Yeah, you throw them a few crumbs, you engage with them, you know, but you dig in your heels on certain things which are of vital national interest, which is what I imagine is likely to happen going forward.
That's good to hear. But, you know, now let's come back to the meteor stuff of this, you know, Pakistani terrorists getting all bumped up all over the place. And by some, apparently, what is the phrase that's being used? Unknown gunmen. Unknown gunmen.
Yeah, but
on bikes and stuff.
But in Urdu, Ram, it's called Namalum Afraad.
Okay.
But in Pakistan, it's very often said that ये जो नामालूम है हमको मालूम है कौन है ये एंड बेसिकली इट्स अ यूफेमिज्म व्हिच इज वेरी ऑफन यूज्ड फॉर पाकिस्तानी डर्टी ट्रिक्स एजेंसीज डर्टी ट्रिक्स डिपार्टमेंट ऑफ पाकिस्तानी इंटेलिजेंस एजेंसीज द आईएसआई आईबी एमआई गाइस द डेथ स्क्वाड्स व्हिच दे हैव यू नो रेस्ड एंड दे नर्चर एंड दे सस्टेन एंड देयर आर प्लेंटी ऑफ दीस डेथ स्क्वाड्स व्हिच दे रन They also have their own, assassins within their ranks who they use to bump off inconvenient people. So normally this term Namalum Afraad is used for those characters. In this particular case, nobody is really very clear as to who exactly is behind these killings. There are many people in India who would love to imagine it's Agent Vinod or Phantom or BB or one of those fictional Bollywood characters who is doing all of this. But, maybe in a couple of cases, yes, you could probably say that, yeah, it could have been somebody who's been, who's been contracted out to do something like this. Maybe. I don't know. But, I would imagine that in bulk of the cases, simply given the kind of geographical spread in which these incidents are taking place, it's right all the way from, POK down to the hinterlands of Punjab, to Karachi, to Balochistan, to KP, tribal areas. If Indian intelligence has that kind of a footprint in Pakistan, then okay, fine. Then everything what people say that, India is the next superpower, I'll buy it. I have my doubt whether that's actually the case.
Yeah, but, we are also talking internationally. I mean, we are talking about some of the people who have been killed in the UK and a lot in Canada, other places too.
Yeah, look. So, look, the UK guy apparently, you know, there was a post-mortem in that guy's case, that Khanda.
They said it was poison or something like that, right?
Yeah, but they had figured out it's a natural death, apparently, in Khanda's case.
Okay.
In the case of this fellow, this terrorist, Khalistani fellow, Nijjar, again, look, the guy was a criminal at the end of the day. Most of these Khalistanis are criminals, you know. All the, you know, drug gangs and, the, you know, the gun running and all the extortion networks, all criminal activities done by these Khalistanis. They are a mafia. They are a mafia of the sorts which has now got its tentacles in the highest echelons of the Canadian government.
Right.
And I'm not making this up. And it's very clear because Jagmeet is their man and Jagmeet literally holds the Canadian government by its curlies. And Trudeau wants to give in to them on everything. And Trudeau wants to use this as, you know, some kind of a political tool for his own political future. It doesn't matter if Canada becomes another Pakistan. He doesn't give a damn as long as he's in, you know, the seat of power. So, in Nijjar's case, it just as well could be a gangland killing because even in the past, there have been other people who have been involved in this entire, you know, there was this guy, Ripu Daman Singh Malik, who had turned That's around, right. who'd become, yeah. you know, who had renounced this whole Khalistani thing. He was bummed off a few months earlier before Nijjar.
Yes.
There was a lot of bad blood on that. A number of other killings have happened in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
How come the Canadians have not gone down, got to the bottom of that? How come they have suddenly narrowed down on this Nijjar fellow? So I think in most of those cases, there is no smoking gun really, you know, which would point to India. But the really interesting and the really mysterious ones are the spate of killings in Pakistan.
Right.
And I think the numbers are around 24 over the last year or so.
I heard about 30 already.
Yeah, so, but you could go back because the first, as far as I remember, the first guy who was actually bummed off in a very mysterious way happened way back in 2013. When, you know, there was no Doval, there was no Modi, none of these guys was there. You know, these guys had not come into the central government. So I'm talking about 2013.
Right.
There was this guy, I believe, if I remember correctly, his name is Khalid Bashir. He was supposed to be one of the top henchmen of Hafiz Saeed, his bodyguard and, you know, very close to him and all. And suddenly this guy got kidnapped and he disappeared and then his dead body was found. So that was the first instance of one of these guys getting bummed off. Over the years, there's been an odd case here and there. Again, we don't know what exactly was behind it, whether there was some kind of internecine warfare between groups, whether there was some kind of a power struggle within the group, whether there was somebody... Look, all these groups are only despicables who are members of it, right? No normal, decent human being will ever become a member of a jihadist terrorist organization, right? You have to be depraved kind of a character to become part of these guys. And it's quite possible that, you know, two people might not be getting along with each other. There are groups, there are subgroups, all kinds of things. And one might have decided that, you know, he's going to bump off somebody else. So that is a possibility.
Right.
There is a possibility that some of these guys might be going rogue. They might be doing their own thing. They might be wanting to, you know, break the chains of slavery, as they are called by Imran Khan, of the Pakistani deep state. And they might have gone rogue and they are being taken out. We don't know. We don't have enough information. But so, like I said, purely speculation. In some cases, it could be maybe, you know, Indian or some other intelligence agency funding it. In some cases, it could just be the Pakistanis doing this because they want to start cleaning up some of this mess. And most of these guys, they're not the top guys. They're not the most well-known fellows. But they're in some ways the linchpin of the organization. You know, they're mm-hmm. they're the middle rung leaders. And in fact, if you really want to damage an organization seriously, then it's pointless getting rid of the guys right at the bottom. They are replaceable. They are pawns, right? Mm-hmm. It's even counterproductive to get rid of the top guys, because the top guys don't really, they have a certain value, definitely. But decapitation of the top leadership doesn't necessarily lead to any, loss of firepower as far as an organization is concerned.
Also, it is that much more difficult to target.
Yeah, it's when the middle rung, the guys who are really controlling the things, you know, who are running your media operations, the guys who are running your recruitment, the guys who are running your training, the gun running, mm-hmm. the works, right? The real planners, the Zarar Shahs and the Lakhvis and, this low-life Sajid Mir type of guys. It's when you go after these guys and you start, chopping their heads off, that actually starts affecting the effectiveness of an organization. That's my analysis. There are people who would probably disagree with me on that. But this is the level of people who are now being taken out in many ways. In some cases, some of them are supposed to have retired. But it's difficult to say what exactly is behind it. But obviously, there is something behind it, because, if 1, 2, 5, 6 cases, you can say that it's coincidence. But when it happens, my information is about 24, give or take a few. Yours is almost 30 people. That's a lot of coincidence, That kind of coincidence doesn't normally happen.
Mm-hmm. And they're all linked to some event or the other in India as well. But then I suppose that's part of the... I mean, any big terrorist there would be in some way linked to India.
So because they're... Number one, they're linked to one of the terrorist organizations in Pakistan. And number two, in many cases, they are linked to a relatively recent operation which they might have carried out, which caused a lot of casualties. Now, which is why, one wonders, is this some kind of a CBM taking place? This is one of the metrics that you get rid of. Here is this kill list, which you tell the Pakistanis that, look, if you're genuinely serious about moving forward, then you deliver on this. And the Pakistanis are known to doing stuff like this. If you could capture the former Taliban ambassador and hand him over to the Americans and send him to Guantanamo, what's one of these lowlifes? They're expendable commodities. They've done it earlier. They've done it with people like the Lashkar-e-Jhangvi chief. What is that guy's name? Malik Ishaq. He, along with one of his closest lieutenants, his entire family, Malik Ishaq, his lieutenant's entire family, about 15 people were bummed off in one night in cold blood. They claimed that it was a police encounter. Standard formulation that we were taking these guys somewhere. You're taking somebody at 12 o'clock in the night somewhere, right? And then their associates attacked the convoy, tried to free them. And in that shootout, these guys died. 15 of them died in a shootout. If you believe that, you'll believe, in fairy tales, and you'll believe in everything. But that's a fairy tale. But they bummed off Malik Ishaq. Malik Ishaq was one of their, hitmen, death squad guys who was there. So they've been doing something like this in the past. So it's, again, pure speculation. Is some kind of a kill list being given to the Pakistanis? And said that, look, if you deliver on this, then, this is a proof of your bona fides, that you're actually interested in starting a process of normalization.
That's an interesting thing. But, since we're talking about the Indian part of it, of course, as you said, there are lots of people who insist that it's all being done by the Indian, agencies and stuff. While that's very good for...
makes you feel really good, we all thought that Pathan and Jawan are only in movies, but if they're actually doing stuff. Well, yeah, I love it, but I'm very skeptical about it.
Yes, but you know, even if you've taken out two or three, but claim to have taken out the rest, you know, would that give us any benefit in terms of actually sowing some seeds of doubt amongst the Pakistani terrorist groups?
Yeah, I would imagine so. So the thing is that, look, if you manage to take out a few also, then suddenly, you know, there is this fear among many others that now we are not safe in our safe havens.
Right.
So there is certainly that that factor which is going to be there, which is always going to be there. And it is possible that, you know, you might have got some, way to get at one or two of these guys. But bottom line, see, there are two things. One is the sheer, you know, Ram, in any of these operations, it's not a very simple hit and run job. You know, right. You need to have some kind of a network. You need to have some kind of a presence on ground. You need to have some kind of an information, some intelligence network on the ground, safe houses where, you know, it's a complicated thing.
Absolutely.
Now, you could do it maybe in a Karachi, you could do it in a Lahore, but doing it in Daska, doing it in Bajor, doing it in obscure places, and then getting away scot-free every time.
And where every stranger is looked at suspiciously the moment they get anywhere near.
Exactly. You know, these are Pakistan is very provincial in many ways. You know, it's still a very provincial kind of a place. It's very backward, very provincial. Where, you know, anybody from outside who comes in, people are like they are in India also in many places, especially in the rural part. You know, people are pesky. They want to know everything about you, what your background is, this, that, the rest of it.
Exactly. Yes.
So one is, you know, being able to establish a network which is that extensive. That causes some amount of skepticism. The second thing, which is equally interesting to my mind, is actually two things. One, the sheer silence in Pakistan. Nobody's talking about
it. There are a few people who are, you know, again saying that outside forces and all that stuff.
No, those people, look, there are a few of those clowns sitting in the US who talk about it, you know. Most of them are also having an axe to grind. But by and large, the Pakistan media is completely silent. It's not coming out. There is no furor over it.
Okay? Exactly.
So one, that's kind of strange, because normally if they actually thought the Indians are doing it, then they would raise a right royal storm about it. I would imagine so. So one is that. The other is that knowing the Pakistanis, they would then want to do some kind of counter strikes in India. I would imagine, that, okay, if you guys can do something like this, then even we will do it. But they can't do the counter strikes if they're doing it themselves or somebody else. Yeah. You know, it's an Indian-assigned conflict. It's intra-group, inter-group, whatever. Somebody else, you know, the Taliban or somebody coming in, bumping off these guys. They don't like them anymore. I don't know. But if supposing they were convinced that it was Indian intelligence assets or agents or whatever you want to call them, who are behind these kind of killings, would they just be sitting on their haunches and doing nothing? I don't know. I'm a little skeptical if that was going to be the case, because
history says otherwise. History says otherwise. I mean, you can't just, they are not likely to sit back.
Yeah, you know, there's always a kind of a tit for tat that you, and then there is this thing that, look, you know, there is a certain honor also among these rogues. There are certain red lines none of them cross. You know, you don't hit the families of people. You don't do many such things, because then when the other side starts doing the same thing, then, you know, it gets really ugly. Otherwise, it's part and parcel of the business. But out here, we've not seen any such action as well. So I am a little skeptic. I'm pretty sure that, you know, it feels really, look, I will certainly never shed a tear if a terrorist has died. He's been bummed off. What?
Absolutely. Right?
There's no sympathy.
No matter who does it. Yeah.
Yeah. And no matter who does it, there's no sympathy for the bugger.
Yeah.
I would also be extremely happy if, you know, it was Phantom or Jawan Pathan, Agent Vinod, any of these characters, right? I would really be very happy and satisfied that, you know, we have that kind of thing. But I have my doubts whether it's any of these.
Mm-hmm.
That is where we are at. And that's the best one can do, given that this, there is something very sinister which is taking place.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody really knows.
Yeah, we're almost running out of time. But I have a last question. I read somewhere that one of the things could be, apart from, you know, as you said, perhaps we have given them a kill list, but I believe the FATF too has given them some kind of a thing about terrorists. I don't know what the Financial Action Task Force has to do with terrorists, but I believe they too have a...
No,
could that be...
At best, Ram, my own sense is that the FATF at all is a very peripheral thing in this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
The Pakistanis need to be careful on this whole FATF question. But for now, they are out of the woods. You know, they're back. Right. They're no longer in a gray list or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the incentive for them to come onto, you know, the normal list, the white list, if for want of a better phrase, that incentive is not really there. They're already there, right?
Right.
And to push them back onto the gray list is not going to be it's not something which will happen, you know, simply because something is going on. In fact, there are some recent reports of some massive, you know, just about 2 or 3 days back, there is this encounter specialist from Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
The man who you could say is the illegitimate father of the Pashtun Tahaffuz movement, because it was the killing which he did of a Pashtun model which led to the creation of PTM. This fellow cop by the name of Rao Anwar, who is believed to have carried out 400 encounter killings in Pakistan.
400, okay.
Yeah, basically he's a mafia kind of a guy, probably extorts money, kills people for taking money. That kind of a character. But he's again one of those despicables. But he was supposed to be, Asif Zardari said, ke, ye toh humara bachcha hai. He's our child, you know,
okay.
Something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he apparently 2 days back or thereabouts, he has given an interview exposing the corruption of the Bhutto Zardari family and the entire mafia operation these guys run as part of the Sindh government. And his allegation is that they have done money laundering to the tune of 700 billion Pakistani rupees, which would roughly be about $3.5 billion.
Right.
In the last 5 odd years, they've done that magnitude of money laundering.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's his allegation. I would imagine that is a bigger crime in FATF, which deals with financial action, rather than this. Okay, the fact that there is a report that the Pakistanis gave a passport to Sirajuddin Haqqani in those days, that should be a bigger problem, because Sirajuddin Haqqani is an international designated terrorist by the United Nations.
Right.
He comes under the 1267 committee. And one of the things which you cannot do is facilitate his travel.
Right.
And if the Pakistanis were doing something like that, then they're falling foul of a UN Security Council instruction. That would be a far more serious thing, you know, which should occupy them, rather than going and bumping off, you know, a second rung terrorist. So I think when people talk about FATF, you know, probably they don't really understand where the FATF is coming from and what exactly...
I was wondering what that report was about, which is I thought you might have some So anyway, I think, you know, in your own inimitable and very clear way, you put the whole thing into perspective. I think a lot of our leaders would have been, I mean, viewers would have been very, very interested in what's been going on. And I think you put it, though, of course, there will be people who will say, no, we did it. You're just covering up for it. But that's a different thing. And I think it's most always, of us...
It's always good fun to take credit for something which somebody else has done. And true, take the credit and feel good about it. Yeah, a lot of people do that all the time. You know, they do that in every walk of life, right? That you true. Do the hard work, somebody else takes the credit for it.
True.
So I think we should very give true. The credit to the people who are actually doing this good work, whoever they might actually. Be, whoever the namaloom afraad are.
Now that several conspiracy theories doing the rounds have been demolished by Sushant in his typical outspoken and no-nonsense panel, one can only hope that the Mandarins in New Delhi listen to his advice on how to deal with the situation. We can only wait and watch.